This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. And Brandon, I'm back. It's good to be back.
My God, it's good to have you back. I mean, we were very lucky to have two great guest hosts, Steven and Ben, in the last couple of weeks, but I just missed my guy. You're my guy, Josh.
I know. That's what you said at my wedding, and it was made everybody very uncomfortable.
I grabbed the microphone away from your mother, and I said, "This is my guy. This guy is my guy." It just took you like 2 weeks to get over this whole baby thing, like the whole child rearing that's come to its completion now, and now you're back doing the podcast full time.
Yeah, she's actually away in college now. I mean, we cycled through this thing very quickly.
They grow up so fast, don't they?
They really do. 2 weeks. My daughter Quinn was born on Friday, September 30th. And so she is 2.5 weeks old now. I'm in the middle of, I've got to have a few weeks of paternity leave and 2 weeks of intensive baby raising. And that's still ongoing, but she's sleeping a little more on a schedule right now. And so I'm able to find 90 minutes here. I'm literally in my bedroom. The podcast recording studio is now Quinn's nursery. So I am literally sitting on my bed with like an old like TV stand that I'm using.
This is your life now, Josh.
Yeah.
Your surplus to requirements at this point, as far as your household is concerned.
Exactly. But I've still got my mic. I've got my 6-point crisp here, and I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, as long as we don't actually talk about my game week score this week. I'm actually glad that, last year, frustrating season, got to blame myself for that. This year, frustrating season so far, I get to blame the baby.
Sure. I remember two or three seasons ago, you had not a season up to your level, and you blamed it on planning a wedding or something like this. So if listeners sense a pattern over the seasons, you're not alone.
I'm a poor loser, and if I lose, then it's not my fault. It's the the universe is conspiring to make things tough for me. So it was a weird game week. I know it was for a lot of people. I mean, both of us captained Sergio Aguero, and you asked me.
The number of missed penalties or saved penalties, just looking at people's teams where they had both Benteke and Aguero up front with minus points. It's rare that you would ever see a week like this, and it's one where we all have to band together and stay strong.
Yeah, they finally calculated the average. We're recording this shortly after the Man U Liverpool match, so not all the stats are updated yet. And in fact, we don't have a full Hail Shooter Super League update yet. We're going to try to tack one on at the end of the podcast if they posted the updated top 10. But looks like the average was 39 points this week, which is
Higher than I would have guessed, but
Higher than I would have guessed, too. I guess, you know, enough people own Man U and Liverpool defenders that, you know. And actually, you know what? It's funny because I brought in Loris Karius, and in his two gimme matches, he conceded really bad goals. And I did not play him at home to Man U. I guess I should have. So
yeah, you went with Pickford instead because that Sunderland team has their trajectory is positive in every way.
To be honest, I didn't think twice about it. I felt, you know, I mean, Pickford away to Stoke. I mean, even if they conceded a goal or two, I figured he might rack up four points just with saves, you know. And I had to think with that Liverpool defense, they conceded a goal to Man U. It was kind of a strange match. I felt like the stage got to these players a little bit. I mean, I know that it's not uncommon for a Mourinho team to. I don't even think he parked the bus, though. I mean, I first of all, parking the bus should just get like removed from the lexicon because it's such a tedious, overused expression at this point, right? Like,
yes, I agree. Like, I totally agree.
Every time Man U keeps a clean sheet, it's because Mourinho parked the bus, or you know, when he was at Chelsea, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think we're all tactically sophisticated enough now just to accept that there are many different ways that one can manage a game, and Mourinho's. Like you're saying, parking the bus or negative tactics. These are just ways that one can choose to play, and it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. He certainly isn't the first manager to, you know, try to keep it a relatively low scoring game on the road and be happy with a draw. You know, and I say that not even as a Man United fan, but you know, which I'm not. But you know, I don't think the Liverpool was kept scoreless because of his tactics. I thought both teams had, you know, real lack of clinical finishing in this match. I mean, you know, really more Liverpool than Man United. I mean, did Man U even have a shot on goal in this match?
That's a very good question. I mean, there were some crosses, I guess. I mean, you have a guy like Zlatan who is not really sure where he is on the field at any given moment. It's right. A little tough.
We're going to talk about Zlatan quite a bit. I don't know about quite a bit. We're certainly going to talk about him later. The big topic for this week is buy, sell, hold. And we're talking about several different players in the Premier League.
It's like the always cheating boiler room, right? buy, sell.
So before we get any further, though, Brendan, I did want to say thanks to Stephen and Ben for co-hosting the podcast. I listened to both episodes that they were on, and they did a great job. Very interesting. Like it was actually kind of cool because they're both, you know, very serious, smart fantasy players, know a ton about the game, and have a slightly different approach, I'd say, or certainly a slightly different personality. And so it was kind of cool to get different perspectives, and especially Stephen, as you know, a fellow father of a young child, it was kind of cool to hear his thoughts on watching the game as well. So yeah, we'll see. So some of you may have seen I posted a photo on Twitter of baby Quinn in her little Arsenal onesie, and I actually have red and white. So
but the elusive third kit that they sell to everyone is still in the mail, right?
Yeah. Exactly. If you've got the blue with black shoulders or you know, whatever it is this year, you know, send it our way. So
what about me, Josh? How do you think I did while you were away? Pretty good, right?
Very good. Very good. Very good. yeah. Okay, thanks, everybody. Yep.
But we have to go back to birthdays. So you said Quinn's birthday is now September 30th. And birthdays are now going to be a big deal here at the Always Cheating Podcast.
Yeah, so I put up a post last week. I spent way too long on this, especially considering that basically no one read it or responded to it when I put this post up. I think it was the least popular article in the history of Reddit. I put it on the FBL Reddit site, and it was being aggressively downvoted.
I created a secret account just to downvote it. I didn't care for it.
Basically, I took a look at Premier League birthdays, just players who performed, just seeing how they performed over the years on their birthday. I was just curious if, you know, Koscielny had scored an overhead kick goal early in the season on his birthday. And I knew that it was Bellerin and Erickson both scored on their birthday last year. And I thought, is there like a possible like edge here? Like just to, you know, can we find players who've scored on their birthdays? And if you go back, you actually, I looked at around 55 players or so, and around 20% of them had some record of doing something on their birthday, which is a pretty reasonable number when you think that most of them, but many of them were born in, you know, June, July, August, where there aren't matches, or it's just, they didn't have a match on their birthday, you know? I mean, it's, you know, you only play, even including Champions League and Europa League and whatever, you know, you're only talking, well, I included Europa League, but, you know, whatever, all the various leagues and cups, you're only talking about, 40, 50 games a year, and 50 is at the very top end if you're playing every match. So, it was about 20% had actually done something on their birthdays. And what made it kind of interesting is that this last week we had two of those players actually had birthdays. They had home matches on their birthday, which are Mesut Ozil and Nolito. And as it turned out, both of them scored on their birthday.
So I met up with you. I actually dragged you out of your house to go watch these games at a nearby bar. And so Ozil scored, and you were kind of miffed at first because Ozil is in my midfield. It's good for my team. It's bad for you. But you still managed to get to a certain level of excitement because it began to prove your birthday.
He scored on his birthday. Yep.
So then we're grinding out the rest of these matches on Saturday, and Aguero misses his penalty kick, and we both have him captained. It's really terrible for us. We're sitting on -2. Then Nolito comes on moments later and scores a header, and we just turn to each other and grab each other by the shoulders and scream, it's his birthday!
It was pretty awesome. I mean, it was just the prophecy came true. Now, granted, in the article, I didn't say that it was a guarantee. Obviously, it's not a guarantee that these players are going to score on their birthday, but it looks like there might be a possible edge to be found here. You know, so
I feel like so often when you're watching a match, either these guys have something written on their T-shirt, like how often do they have moments in their life significant enough where they would go so far as to write something on their T-shirt? I mean, right. Mario Balotelli aside, and right. Then they end up scoring to reveal this message, or announcers are throwing stats out there that actually right. turn out to be true, or even like Nacer Chadli scores against Spurs. What are the odds of any of this happening? But somehow they all keep happening.
And I will say there was one person on Reddit who actually wrote, so he went in on Saturday afternoon after the matches were played and said, I read this article, and as a result, I captained Mesut Ozil. So thank you for that.
Wow. That was kind of
cool, actually. So we helped exactly one person with that article.
One person is enough. I'll do this podcast for the rest of my life if all we do is help one person at a time.
So what does it all mean? It's at least something to look forward to moving forward. And I think what's kind of cool is that we actually, in the month of December, it's actually all spaced apart 1 week. Christian Benteke on December 3rd, Wilfred Bony on December 10th, and Andre Ayew, assuming he's back and healthy, on December 17th, all have matches on their birthday. So let's see. We have three more chances to test the birthday theory out.
Well, this is the ultimate narrative, right? Andre Ayew comes back for his first game back from injury on his birthday, and he scores.
Exactly.
I can see it now.
I mean, another thing else that sort of was kind of interesting just to see how old all the players were.
You ever go to imdb.com just to see whose birthday it is and how old they are?
Usually what I'm doing is looking up how tall they are, but I do look at birthdays sometimes too. All right, Brandon. So let's keep it moving here. Hail Cheater Super League. We don't have updated top 10 yet. We'll try to get to it later at the end of the podcast, but if not, we'll certainly post that on Facebook and Twitter. I know that there is at least one man. We'll save it, but congrats to everyone who's doing well. We'll make sure that you get your proper due, once the scores have been updated. Let's jump right into the meltdowns of the week, because we have three meltdowns this week. Are you ready, Brandon? You want to do the first one?
I will happily do the first one because it does have something to do directly with me. It comes from Ross Lagerwood on Facebook, and he says, "How do I learn to live with the bad game weeks and Brandon beating me on our head-to-head?" So Ross and I faced off in the AC Showstoppers head-to-head league this week, and I gave Ross a little bit of a bare-bottom spanking. Ross goes on to say, FPL is like a bad relationship. You keep thinking of the good times, but ultimately there's more bad weeks than good. That's a very negative view of relationships, I have to say, Ross. But it's true. I feel like we see this in the meltdowns every week. It's sort of like, why do we keep coming back to this? And you said something to me, Josh, over the weekend where I was asking you about how fatherhood may have changed how you approach watching sports. And you said the only reason to watch sports is basically to be in the moment and experience those emotions. So frankly, whether these emotions are bad or good, this is exactly why we watch sports. And if you have more bad weeks than good, doesn't that make the good weeks even better?
Exactly. I mean, you just have to keep it all in perspective. You know, having a bad week doesn't make you a bad person, which is sometimes how I feel. Or maybe not even a bad person, but sometimes I'm like, I had a bad week in fantasy. I must be a stupid person. Right. Like, I must be a dumb human, you know, and that kind of thinking is obviously is silly. And you know, the way that I try to justify it sometimes is especially like with our mini league, or we've got some actual cash on the line. Sometimes I just think, you know what? I've already paid the money. You know, so if you're in a cash league, you should everyone put their money in first because
sunk cost.
Yeah, it's a sunk cost. Exactly. Like I don't have to spend this money at the end of the season. It's already sunk into the league. And I think what's really important here is that unlike, in America, NFL fantasy is typically only, something like 14 to 16 weeks long. It's usually 14 weeks in the playoffs. And, you know, a bad week can really cost you. But in, FBL, we're 8 weeks into the season. We've got 30 weeks to go.
You drop like 4 points to your opponent and suddenly you're a million back overall. And, you have a really great week. Next week, you'll be up 2 million. This is how, particularly early in the season, that's how much things shift, right?
Exactly. I mean, I had a terrible week and I did drop a couple hundred thousand spots, but I can move right back up next week. There's no, it's so early and things are so clustered right now that it really doesn't affect you all that much. I mean, come game week 30, 32. Yeah. It's a bigger deal, but because if you're having meltdowns in game week 8, it's just going to be a long season. You really have to, save your meltdowns for like a double game week that goes awry in game week 34 or something like that.
Right, right. Also on Facebook, Dave Baker has a meltdown. He says, I'd like to sincerely apologize to all Toby Alderweireld owners. Unfortunately, I brought him in for game week 8. My curse is very real. This was especially painful being a Spurs fan. If anyone needs me, I'll be curled up in the fetal position.
Yeah, that was, it was just a strange, the clean sheets for, we talked a lot about, or you guys talked a lot about.
This was by all accounts, like a week to bring in a defender. Talked a lot about Arsenal, Tottenham, and even Southampton defenders. None of those clean sheets panned out. And it just shows you how hard that is to predict. I mean, on paper, you would say Swansea at Emirates or West Brom, typically defensive team playing against Spurs, the one of the most rock and roll teams in the Premier League right now.
Yeah, it was exactly. I mean, these things do not always go according to plan. I certainly stand by any pro Arsenal defender arguments that we and everybody else made. I mean, we didn't exactly go out on a risk when we advocated for Arsenal and Spurs defenders, So they're certainly going to come good long term.
But if we could ask Dave to courteously post his transfer each week to the Facebook page so we can avoid exactly it. What we should avoid, Dave, we'd really appreciate that.
Deion Saunders says, De Bruyne, I never say it right. Aguero and Benteke all miss pens. Deeney blanked and I'm on 16 points. Why do I play this game? He's feeling very similar to me. I think 16 was right where I was at the end of Saturday. I did scratch my way into the upper 20s finally by the end, but it's like we said earlier, it's just 1 week out of 38. You got to keep things
true. And if you have De Bruyne in your midfield, it's tough to muddle through game week 8 with his performance, and he really did not look good, but he's just terrible. Coming back. He is one of the best midfielders in the league, playing on one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league. I'm jealous of Dion that he has De Bruyne in his midfield.
We may have underestimated the international break effect a little bit on these teams. I mean, teams like the Man City and Arsenal and even Spurs. I mean, something like the majority of their starters were away, at internationals, and they all three of those teams look pretty flat in those matches. And I guess sometimes we forget that, even if It doesn't matter who you're playing. If, you know, West Brom didn't send barely anybody away for the internationals, you know, and they had 2 weeks to train.
For England, apparently, guys like Theo Walcott or Dele Alli, Gary Cahill, they all pulled it out.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I guess that's just a sign that the English players don't work that hard on international duty, which I think is an opinion held by a lot of people out there.
Walcott was terrible in the international, so he's clearly saving all his magic for the Arsenal. Even though he should have had like 5 goals, right?
That's why he missed out on so many bonus points is because he had so many big chances missed. But of course, everyone knows if Ozil does a single thing in an Arsenal match, he's guaranteed all 3 bonus points. It's some sort of contractual agreement with BPS.com.
Yeah. That was extraordinary. I mean, to score 2 goals out of 3 in a match and only end up with 1 bonus point is a pretty rare thing, I would think.
Joe Allen would never have that happen to him.
That's right. Speaking of Joe Allen, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to get right into our first topic of the day, which is buy, sell, hold. And we're going to talk about several different players.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, Brandon, buy, sell, hold. I'm going to name a player, and you're going to give me your quick reaction, okay? Your instant gut reaction, and then we'll talk about them a little bit.
Okay, it's sort of like a Rorschach test.
Yeah, a Rorschach, exactly. What are your first impressions? So
if I yell out daddy as the first thing, we could just move on.
So by being, meaning, you know, do you want to bring them in right away, or, you know, or you know, if you own them, are you still kind of happy to have them? Sell if you own them, are you ready to get rid? And then hold. Hold can either mean you're going to hold on to them for 1 more week, or you're going to hold on bringing them in.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Etienne Capoue.
Immediate reaction is sell, but the give me 5 seconds of pause, and I would say hold, and I'll tell you why. Because the obvious move here is sell Capoue and bring in Joe Allen. But that is a bit of a knee-jerk, perhaps. Though what we've said about Capoue has borne out, right? There's no way he's going to keep up this form. This is not his typical style of play. And you can see with Agallo.
I'd say the same about Joe Allen, of course.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure I was going to get to that point, too. But you look at Agallo being taken out of the Watford lineup, and the formation has shifted a little bit. And it may be that it doesn't favor Capoue getting as forward as he had been earlier in the season.
Yeah.
But I am probably going to hold Capoue for the time being because they have 2 really good fixtures coming up, Swansea and Hull City. Now, Swansea is a slight question mark given the new manager, and they had a pretty decent look against Arsenal over the weekend. But still, I can imagine a lot of managers out there have other things they need to be dealing with other than Etienne Capoue.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's still on corners, which is kind of extraordinary.
Yeah.
They aren't good corners, but he is on corners. Kind of like when Theo Walcott was on corners, and you're like, why exactly is Walcott on corners? The guy, this is not his strength.
Probably because he's the shortest person on the team. Him and Cazorla can just alternate. They're not going to get the head on it.
Jeremiah Johnson said, time to drop Capoue, right? And I would say it's a qualified response. I would drop Capoue if he is your 4th midfielder, and I would hold him if he's your 5th midfielder. As a 4th midfielder, he's just not delivering enough, and I think that you could bring in someone like Robert Snodgrass, who has some great fixtures coming up, and is despite how awful Hull have looked the last few weeks. I mean,
that performance against Bournemouth was what the Hull we expected to see, that Hull that everyone promised coming into the season.
But they've shown an ability to score. So, I do think that he can get his goals or you know, someone else. I mean, there are some options in that – and this is maybe a discussion for a future podcast, but there are some options in that 5 to 6.5 million range. I mean, even Joe Allen, I guess, is an option there. We're going to talk about him in a second, though. But, but as a 5th midfielder, I think Capoue is fine. He's a – you know, cheap midfielder, especially if you got him a few weeks ago, like you said, who is who's on corners and takes the occasional free kick. He's pretty tall, so he's involved in corner. You know, like if he's not taking corners, he there's a chance he could head the ball. So I think that Capoue is fine as a 5th midfielder.
Yeah, I feel like we've kind of been screwed this season with guys like Capoue, where that he's made the affordable 4th midfielder so affordable that I still have a guy like Ibrahimovic in my front line because I can justify having a really cheap midfield.
Yeah.
So I'm actually very I have an axe to grind with Kapu right now because of that.
I have an axe to grind with my entire team. Everyone but Lukaku.
All right, who's next on the list?
The man himself, Joe Allen. Sigurd Eskelin says, I'm expecting thorough discussion of the Welsh Xavi, hashtag the new Mahrez. Siraj Gris says, is this the dawn of the Wee Joe era, hashtag the new Kapu?
Have you ever heard this term, Wee Joe?
No, I like it, though.
I really like it. It reminds me of Wee Bay on The Wire.
I like that they both used hashtags for different players.
That's what people do on Twitter. I don't know if you hang out online very much, Josh, but
so when he calls Joe Allen the new Mahrez, is that a 9.5 million midfielder who doesn't score or assist?
Sure, or even start games.
Start games anymore? I know that was because he's come back from the friendly. I think who knows? That was a weird match. I mean, Lester, wow.
It's depressing. Steer clear.
Let's not go down that road.
That is not a good scene unless you're playing Champions League fantasy and you're looking at Mark Albrighton right now. Then I say my initial reaction to Mark Albrighton in Champions League fantasy is bye.
So you guys talked about Joe Allen a bit on the last podcast. What are your thoughts on Allen?
We did. When Ben was on last week, we did a side-by-side stats comparison of Joe Allen versus Arnautovic. And Joe Allen won by a long shot, actually. I mean, no one can really argue if you look at the eye test. Like, Arnautovic is instrumental to that Stoke attack, and he has been for more than a season now. But Joe Allen is getting so many touches in the box, even if he's cast as this link play guy or the engine room in the back of the midfield. The way he scored that first goal over the weekend, he was making a darting run that somebody you would expect Alexis Sanchez to make that kind of run. I'm feeling very bullish on Joe Allen right now. And I mean, it's in large part due to their insane run of fixtures. Whole Swansea, West Ham, Bournemouth, Watford all coming up here. If you need to make a move in your midfield, I see no reason why you would not want to go in for Joe Allen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I were wildcarding right now, this game week or next, I mean, he's the perfect Kapu replacement, and I would replace him. I would replace Kapu with Allen. He's also – you can probably get him for, you know, a $3 million savings at this point, right? If you can sell Kapu for $5 million or something.
Yeah, he's at 4.8 right now, and I think – by the time people hear this podcast, it'll probably already be at 4.9 million. So yeah. It's time to buy. It's time to get in on that Kapu style value train.
I do think it's the same thing with. I mean, he's not a defensive midfielder the way Kapu is. I mean, he's more of a deep line playmaker. You know, he's not a scorer.
Some might even call him the Welsh Xavi.
Some might even call him that. So, you know, I mean, I remember him back in like the Leon Britton days when he and Britton were the engine room for Swansea, you know, back in 2011 or whatever it was. So I do think that I don't think it's going to last. I mean, Joe Allen, it's funny because Allen sort of famously couldn't score. Do you remember how I feel like he would fluff chance after chance as he was with Liverpool.
Yeah, a bit of an Aaron Ramsey type.
Yeah, but Rodgers would bring him on in the 70th minute, and he missed two clear-cut scoring opportunities.
Just like Kapu, though, Joe Allen is on corners. So given the – Ben and I talked about this last week a little bit. Like given the tall stature of a lot of those men on Stoke City –
right.
I predict a few corner assists for Joe Allen in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if we're comparing apples to apples, right? I mean, if we're comparing Joe Allen to other very cheap fourth and fifth midfielders, I think he stands out. We're not comparing him to whomever, Alexis Sanchez or something.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no comparison there.
Yeah.
As fantastic as it would be, Joe Allen will not be the next Mahrez.
Right. Exactly. So, all right, let's keep it moving here. Buy, sell, hold Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I can't really say it any better than you have written here in the show notes, Josh. It's buy, but it's two buys. It's bye-bye. Goodbye. Bye, Zlatan. I mean, while you were away doing your fatherly duties, we talked all around the circle of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. we had Steven on, and we basically just threw him out the window with the bathwater. And then we tried to, when Ben was on last week, we tried to be a little more cerebral about it. We looked at Zlatan's stats. He had very impressive stats, apart from the ones that really matter, and that would be conversion rate.
Right.
And then watching this Liverpool game, it certainly reinforces the former argument.
I mean, I feel like I've watched 90 minutes of almost every Man U match this season, and I don't know how you could have watched the last three or four matches and really felt like he was, you know, he was a lethal Aguero-esque scorer, which is, you know, what you kind of need him to be at that price.
Everyone knows how much I follow Sam Vokes in this league, and I'm not even joking when I say Ibrahimovic resembles Sam Vokes at times. He is so immobile.
Yeah.
And there were runs that he tried to make in this Liverpool match where Dejan Lovren had gone off the line to go intervene in some strange happening on the sideline. And Zlatan was left all by his lonesome in the middle of the field, and Pogba could just pick him out. But he didn't have the pitch awareness or the presence of mind to hold his run. He was offside multiple times for no reason.
I know. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's a fit issue. I just think that it's the same problem that Man U have had the last couple of years, which is that they keep adding new attacking players, and then they kind of throw them all out there in different combinations, and it never settles down. And, you know, I mean, Paul Pogba, I mean, that guy, sometimes it doesn't seem like he is trying to help other people score. It seems like he's really trying to, I don't know.
I could see Zlatan being much more of an asset if Man United were a more attacking team at the moment. United seems to have trouble sustaining an attack, and if Zlatan were able to post up in the penalty box as opposed to on the midfield line, then he'd be useful. But his speed just isn't there, so he can't make those Van Persie-esque runs in behind the defense, or even Rashford-esque runs. So he just needs to be further up the field, and it's not happening for United right now.
It's not happening, and at that price, I mean, he's down to 11-4 now. I mean, the thing that's frustrating about Zlatan is that it kind of feels like fool me once, twice, three times, shame. You know, I mean, it was so many people like.
Three times as long.
Yeah,
isn't that?
I mean, I wanted to get him out when I wild carded 3 weeks ago, and I didn't do it. And I wanted to get him out when he blanked in game week 6, and I didn't do it. I wanted to get him out when he blanked in game week 7, and I didn't do it. And now it's game week 8, and he's blanked once again. I mean, at one point, do you just let go of this guy? You know, he's going
to
score this year, but
there's no.
I'm sure he's
going to
score a ton, but. Yeah. It's not happening right now.
Yeah, there's just no value. I was dead certain he was going to score against Liverpool. I was also convinced for some reason that United was going to murder Liverpool today, but that was foolish. But yeah, you're right. Zlatan will bite us, but the values prospect there is absolutely awful.
Takes us right to the next player. Buy, sell, hold, Diego Costa.
Buy, absolutely. I had Costa earlier in the season. And then Chelsea was coming up on a strange run of fixtures, and I dumped him for Sam Vokes. People know the story there. And I was a little scared of Costa being on four yellows, but it seems that Costa is able to play just fine on four yellows. If you watch Costa play the last couple of weeks, you can see he's clearly cognizant that if he gets a yellow, he's out. And I'm sure he's waiting for a match week before an FA Cup fixture or something like this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's probably true.
His form is undeniable, though. And, I mean, he's the highest goal scorer in the league right now. And based on the performance against Leicester this weekend, everyone is thinking that Conte is starting to figure out the formation he wants to play, and Costa is only going to benefit more from it.
It is scary, that yellow card. I mean, it does sit there.
Yeah. It's sort of the opposite of what we're arguing for Zlatan, right? Like, we have to get rid of Zlatan knowing that he will score a goal at some point, but we have to pick up Costa knowing he will miss a game at some point.
Exactly. I mean, I almost feel like in hindsight, I capped Ibrahimovic out of fear, you know, fear of his high ownership and fear that I wasn't going to have him, especially for that Stoke City match in game week 7. And, it overrode my better judgment. You know what I mean? Because with the 4 or 5 million I could have saved, yeah, if I had Charlie Austin or Troy Deeney or whatever instead, that money could have gone to the midfield. It can go into the back line. You know, it's all over the place. And so, yeah, he is going to score, and his ownership is high. But it's just this is not the time to. And they don't even have really good fixtures coming up, and they've got a lot of tough matches on the the docket. So, yeah, I think. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, we're back on Ibra because I'm so obsessed with it. Yeah.
But, I mean, Costa's value is just moving up, up, up consistently week to week. He's already up to 10.2 million. So you kind of have to sell Zlatan and pick up Costa ASAP if you don't want to turn into making like a very small profit of just 1 million.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at maybe burning some points this week. My team needs a reformation, you know?
It needs a reformation. I like that. Does that mean just like rolling a reefer, smoking a reefer?
Yeah, it's actually a Protestant reformation. It's full on. All right. Antonio, buy, sell, hold.
That is a bye-bye. That is a sell. I have not been an Antonio owner yet this season. I know you are, and he was just in that scorching early season form. And
I have not been an owner during the fun times. I've been an owner in the last, the left back playing Antonio. I think I'm going to hold him through Sunderland. They play Sunderland in game week 9. And that was the reason I didn't sell him this week. And I kind of went on Twitter. You know, I've been out of the loop a little bit. I wanted to get on there, and everyone kind of convinced me to keep Antonio and not bring in Theo Walcott, which does sting a little bit, I will admit. But you know, I don't blame anybody. I mean, it was not a great week for underlying stats players. I'll say that much. Or players with underlying stats that made it seem like they're about to come good. They still may bear fruit. I mean, I'm certainly not an anti-stat person, but Antonio and Ibra and you could throw Dusan Tadic in there. I mean, more of the same from those guys.
Antonio has a bit of a Zlatan issue in that it's a poor value proposition, because Antonio, if he were at 6.5 or lower, fine, great. He's going to get at the end of a cross, at least on a monthly basis, at the very least. But at 7.5, I think that's how much he costs. It's too much for a guy that's going to get rotated with the defensive lineup and a West Ham team that's got a lot of questions around it at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he's going to earn a stay of execution for one more week. I mean, you can't sell a player when they're home to Sunderland. I don't think
you can't. You can't. I really wouldn't blame you if people held on to him for a longer period of time, because the guy is.
I mean, the only fixture that's better is home to Hull, right? So I think you've got to keep him for that.
Yeah, right.
Okay, the last one is kind of a tricky one, I think, and that's Dele Alli. Buy, sell, hold, Brandon.
I would be very tempted to buy Dele Alli right now. Ben and I talked a little bit about him, and we were comparing his stats to Heung-min's son, and his stats are on the rise. I mean, as evidenced by his goal scoring record now, and he's scored for England, and then he's got two in a row for Spurs. Even though he might be a rotation risk, he is more or less the focal point of that offense. If not, he's definitely the leader of that offense with Harry Kane out, and Son is a bigger rotation risk. If we've learned anything from the West Brom game,
right.
And Dele Alli, there was some discussion on Twitter today about choosing between Dele Alli and Theo Walcott. And for me, this is where Dele Alli starts to shine, is that he is on the verge of being a real differential. He's 6.4% ownership. Yeah. And that to me is just low enough for, if Dele Alli has a great week, your team is going to have a great week by comparison.
Yeah, four of their next six fixtures, and really, if you want to look even further down the line, I guess six, seven. I mean, six of their next nine fixtures are fantastic. Maybe seven out of nine. They play Bournemouth away, Leicester at home, both very good fixtures. Arsenal away, certainly capable of scoring in that game.
Yeah.
Then West Ham at home, Chelsea away, Swansea at home, Man U away, and then Hull and Burnley back-to-back home fixtures. There probably will be some rotation, as you said, but I think that I think he's a great option. And like you said, 6.4% ownership, an actual midfield differential on a good team. It's kind of nice to have, you know, 8 weeks into the season.
Here's a move. You move Zlatan to Costa, and that gives you enough money to turn Antonio into Dele Alli.
Yeah, and that could be a move that you do over 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know? There's no urgency here to get on that. Yeah. I don't think there's a real urgency to get on the Dele Alli wagon just yet, because he's not going to go crazy like Joe Allen.
I was trying to look up So the Chelsea's next fixture is home to Man United. Oh, that's an interesting fixture with Mourinho back. So do you want – I mean, yeah, that's a tricky one. I don't think I want to hold Zlatan for that match.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with that United-Chelsea game. I don't think I want to – I don't even – well, actually, it'd be really fun to own Costa in that match, because you know Costa will be fired up for a big game like that.
Yeah, and the appeal of Costa, too, is that there's no rotation risk for them. I mean, they have no – you know, there's all they have are a couple of – you know, League Cups, and but they're not in Europe, so he's going to play every single match. They're, you know, he's not going to play in any of the kind of lower level cup matches. Yeah. So,
I mean, Batshuayi could come in for him at some point, but maybe only during the holiday period.
Right. Exactly. And you know, when you start talking about the holiday period, I mean, no one's safe anyway, so there's no point in even worrying about that.
I'm not safe. You're not safe. Maybe Quinn isn't safe.
No one's safe. Brandon, that's been Buy, Sell, Hold. And maybe we'll make this a weekly feature. I kind of like this. Nice and clean.
Yeah, I'm going to refer to it as the always cheating boiler room. But Buy, Sell, Hold is probably a little more user-friendly.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. And we're going to talk about cheap third strikers. There's some interesting third striker options right now. And I think there's a lot to consider there, especially if you're thinking about a more elaborate move of Ibra to someone who's like 6 million to turn someone else into Alexis Sanchez. You see where I'm going with this?
I think I do. We'll find out later.
All right, let's do it. Same old podcast,
always cheating. All right, Josh, as you alluded to before that quick little break, we're here to talk about cheap third strikers. If we're looking at making some big transfers, maybe we're going to drop a striker, add a midfield. Who are the up-and-coming, cheap-ish third strikers that really strike our fancy? So, Josh, you pulled some stats together here, and we're going to look at five guys in particular. You got Charlie Austin, Christian Benteke, Troy Deeney, the famous Brazilian, Marcus Rashford, and Callum Wilson at Bournemouth. So what were your big takeaways when you pulled these stats together?
Yeah, and we could have included more players in there. I wanted to keep the price relatively low, and I think
where's the Volkswagen here? Farfignan.
Yeah, there's no Volks, and you know, Andre Gray actually might emerge as an option long term too. I mean, you know, when Gray comes back, I mean, what is his value going to be at? He's going to be sub. He'll be 6.3. Okay, so that's an interesting price for him. But he's still away until October 29th. So, and in that match, they play Man United away. So
Sam Vokes might be dead by then. He'll have run too many miles. He'll just fall over, and he'll be dead.
Okay, so I pulled a few different stats. We've got goals, assists, goal attempts, touches in the box, minutes per goal, minutes per chance, touches in the final third, minutes per touch, big chances created, and shots on target. Now, we're not going to go through all of these, but it's interesting, you know, when you see them all arrayed together with these five players, one thing stands out to me, which is that Charlie Austin is having a tremendous season, despite only starting four games so far this year and playing less minutes than any of these other five strikers.
It's interesting to watch Charlie Austin, just watch him on the field with that Southampton team. He clearly has taken on some kind of mantle, and that team is rallying around him. When he's on the ball, he is in control, and they're sort of rallying around him. And when he took that penalty, he sort of took the team on his back, and I feel like you're seeing these leadership qualities that you sort of saw brief glimmers of when he was at QPR. Mm-hmm. He is really trying to make a statement this season with Southampton. So beyond the stats, I just say he's mentally there.
He is. Of these five players, he's first in goal attempts, which is kind of extraordinary because he's played about half the minutes of some of these players like Troy Deeney. He has 20 goal attempts, and then Callum Wilson is actually second – or no, excuse me, he's Kyle Wilson is third with 17. Benteke is second with 19. And then Deeney and Rashford are the caboose. Austin is first in big chances with 5 big chances. He is first in shots on target. He's also first in minutes per goal. So Austin is really he's dominated all of these categories. And you know,
real quick, Josh, these stats take into account 7 to 8 game weeks. So this would include the minutes per touch would include the full matches that Austin didn't even feature in.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think that, you know, he's 6.4 million and they're away to Man City in game week 9, which would give me pause in a normal season. But given that is the top strikers, or I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm ready to call Austin a top striker, but certainly given that a lot of strikers of, you know, who's the striker on Sunderland, whose name I'm forgetting,
Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if Jermaine Defoe was able to score away to Man City, then I'm not sure why Charlie Austin couldn't either. Right?
I mean, fair enough. I totally agree. Yeah, that Man City defense hasn't offered anything thus far.
They kept one clean sheet all season, I believe. So I think you could bring Austin in this week if you really wanted to. Or you could wait until game week 10. They play Chelsea at home. Game week 11, he plays Hull away. But, you know, I think long term, Charlie Austin is a fantastic cheap third striker option.
Absolutely. Such a fun player to have on your team.
What else stands out to you, Brandon?
Well, Christian Benteke, who I suffered through that West Ham Crystal Palace match over the weekend, and it wasn't a whole lot of fun. But Christian Benteke does stand out in this list for most touches in the box at 61 by quite a mile. I mean, Troy Deeney is next up at 50 touches in the box. But as you mentioned, minutes per chance, Troy Deeney is really dragging. So if Troy Deeney's got 50 touches in the box, but terrible minutes per chance, and Benteke at 61 touches in the box and just under 30 minutes per chance, I like that. I mean, so Benteke's coming off a really terrible game week, having missed a penalty, but he's still sort of what Pardew is that's his main focus of the attack. Is get those pacey wingers down the sidelines and cross into Benteke. So the fact that he's still getting these touches is good. It's positive for Benteke owners.
The weather was pretty strange, to be fair, in that match too. I mean, it was a driving rain, and you know he had some chances anyway. I mean, he missed a point blank chance right at the end of the half. I mean, even after missing that penalty. So, yeah, I think Benteke is a really good option as well. I mean, he's a little bit more. He's, you know, 7.7 million, but still very affordable. Crystal Palace have kind of an up and down run of fixtures. They're away to Leicester next week. They're home to Liverpool after that. Then they play Man City and Southampton in a couple weeks after that. So I don't love those fixtures.
Yeah.
But I do love the way that Benteke has been linking up with with those wingers on Crystal Palace. So I think he's of these 5 players, and just a refresher, it's Austin, Benteke, Deeney, Rashford, and Wilson. I think that Benteke is the second most interesting option.
He really is. And Deeney is, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. Deeney is a testament to the eye test over the stats test. Before Ighalo dropped out of favor with the starting 11 at Watford, if you did a side-by-side comparison on stats, Ighalo sort of beat Deeney in a lot of different areas of the field. But still, right. You couldn't help but watch a Watford match and say, well, Deeney's the guy. Deeney is the one who's going to be putting Watford on his back. He's going to be scoring the goals.
Yeah.
And the stats do not look good by comparison for Troy Deeney here against these guys. But still, I feel pretty good about Deeney going into the upcoming game weeks.
I think the difference between this year and last year is that they have other players who can score now. I mean, you know, Holobas is putting in a goal every 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, exactly. And what are his minutes per touch in the box?
And Isaac's success. I mean, they kind of ran the offense through success in the last match, and he didn't actually have any, you know, success, but he couldn't
help yourself, could you?
I couldn't. I kind of walked into it, and then I was like, "Am I really going to say this?" And then I just said it. So yeah, success had a kind of a mixed bag. I mean, Ighalo didn't even play. I couldn't believe he didn't even come on.
Yeah, that's very telling, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, Ighalo has been pretty out of form since the end of last season.
So speaking briefly,
he could be on his way to the Super League.
As a quick aside about Holobos, I was joking with you before the podcast started. Holobos, his ownership is like 1.9% or something like that in the league. But literally every single person who owns him has a Twitter account and was tweeting about it this weekend and letting everybody know. And it's Holobos Twitter has now replaced Aguero Twitter as the most annoying Twitter.
So do you have to come up for a nickname for Holobos now? Is he the new Brock Toon?
Well, I don't even know how to spell his name.
Well, there are clearly multiple ways to spell Holobos's name, so your guess is as good as mine.
Why is it Cholevas on his jersey and Holebas on the fantasy site?
It does seem disrespectful to his culture that if that's the way he culturally spells his name, why don't you just spell it like that everywhere?
I agree. I really don't understand it. So I don't know.
If you're out there listening, hit us up at Hail Cheaters on Twitter, or just send us an email at hailcheaters@gmail.com and let us know how you feel.
Yeah, we'll make sure we're pronouncing it and spelling it the right way.
About Callum Wilson? So Callum Wilson, after that Bournemouth destruction of Hull City, which frankly, we shouldn't read too much into. Hull City is sort of reverting to predicted form here, and Bournemouth was at home. But Callum Wilson is really intriguing at 6.4 with an ascended Bournemouth.
Yeah, he is. He is intriguing. The Bournemouth team is kind of strange. I mean, they're a little bit like last year. I don't know how all their goals come from defenders somehow. It's just a weird team.
I know exactly how that makes you feel as a Simon Francis owner. As we were sitting at that bar on Saturday morning and you were watching the goals rain in for Bournemouth, Simon Francis couldn't get anything.
I'm sure I mistakenly called him Trevor Francis a couple million times too. I don't know why I can't stop doing that. Yeah, Wilson is an interesting option. I don't like him as much as I like Austin though.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they're both at 6.4. I think the choice is clear there.
It's not just the stats. I mean, I think it's also the eye test. I mean, I think that not only are Austin's stats better, but he just seems like he's in good form. He just seems like he's moving really well. He's like you were saying earlier, he's linking up well with that team. He's the focal point of that attack. So I think he's really, as you can tell, I'm kind of excited about the idea of bringing in Austin. I mean, I think he's really, I just think he's an interesting option. His ownership level is still, very low. I mean, he's at 6.4 million because he was, because his price dropped, because he didn't do anything.
He's a steal. Yeah. 6.8% ownership. So that's Dele Alli territory. So the most disappointing thing here about this table of stats has to be Marcus Rashford. I mean, there's nothing but disappointment for United fans at the moment, given how much money was spent on this team. But Marcus Rashford, the homegrown player, compare his stats to Wilson, Deeney, Benteke, and Austin, and he's just middle of the road in everything.
Yep, exactly. It's kind of surprising. I thought he would come out a little bit better in this. Now, granted, he hasn't played a ton of minutes, but, he's picked up 3 goals. I mean, it was really that one match. He had a little two-match run where he looked great. And I didn't think he looked great in the match today.
I think he's having trouble with the starting 11 role. Him as an impact sub, particularly last season, he was just so explosive for that team. And he came in and gave United something so completely different and terrified the opposing team. But as a member of the starting 11, particularly against Liverpool, he totally looked overawed by the occasion.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same problem that Ibra has. It's just who's getting them the ball? Is it, Mata didn't play today, and, Herrera didn't have a great match, and Pogba, I don't really know what Pogba was doing, So I don't know. It just seems like that whole Man U attack seems like kind of a keep away at the moment.
Pogba is auditioning for the role of an NFL kicker, as far as I can tell. He's just like, seeing how hard can I kick this thing?
I know. Everything is like way up in the air. All right. Well, so that's our third striker analysis. We have a couple of questions here that just didn't fit anywhere else. So I'm going to let's get to those real quick. All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Mahesh says, can you please? OK, it's a 2-point question, but I'm going to actually race past the first one. He says, please talk about Champions League rotation possibilities. And then he says, forgetting the yellow card situation, who best fits the second striker position, Costa or Lukaku? So, do you want to take a first crack at this, Brendan?
Well, sure. The question about Lukaku and Costa really intrigues me and sort of vexes me at the same time, because both of these teams have kind of dicey fixtures coming up. Chelsea has Man United, Southampton, and Everton, and Everton have definitely proven their mettle against City. But then you look at Everton, and they have Burnley, West Ham, and then they hit up with Chelsea.
Maybe but Burnley, West Ham, I mean, come on.
Those fixtures are probably superior to Chelsea's. So then it becomes Costa's form is better, but his fixtures are worse. Lukaku's form it's great, and his fixtures are better.
Yeah, and he's cheaper, and he's not on 4 yellow cards.
Okay. So, yeah, let's do like a pro-con list. There are far more pros for Lukaku than there are cons for him. And Costa's got the yellow card situation and some dicey fixtures. I mean, you have to wait until game week 12 until they hit Middlesbrough, right. And then they come off of that, and they've got Spurs and Manchester City. So Costa has some really weird days ahead for him.
Yeah, I think I can see the situation reversing at some point, but the time being, I would definitely go with. I mean, if I bring in Costa, it would be with a 3-man rotation. There's no way Lukaku is absolutely like pinned to my team right now. I mean, I can't imagine why I would drop him. I mean, just given the price, given his performance. I mean, he scored practically every match the last few weeks. I mean, it was only that away match to Bournemouth where he didn't score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as Champions League rotation, this is always a tough one to answer because it's really difficult to tell. Yeah. Like what I always tend to look for is take a guy like Mesut Ozil. He's not really ever a rotation risk, but if he's getting subbed in the 85th minute at some point, that generally is a wink from Arsene Wenger that he's good to go for the next fixture. Yeah. You're sort of looking for those late substitutions, but even a guy like Ozil, if he plays 90, he's more than likely or almost like 99.9% due to start on the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if they're far away, I mean, if they're traveling to Budapest or something like that for a Wednesday fixture and they play on Saturday, then it's probably a risk. But I mean, Man City is the team that I'd be most curious about. I think that I'm not worried about Aguero now, especially because he didn't play this match.
Well, yeah, and he didn't start today because Pep, or he didn't start on Saturday, clearly for Champions League reasons. Yeah. He was coming off two full matches for Argentina.
Yeah, I think you can drive yourself crazy thinking about rotation possibilities. I mean, the only thing I always try to do is wait until after Wednesday to make any transfers because, you just don't want to take the risk.
I mean, rotation risk.
Or risk of injury, that is.
Rotation risk doesn't even factor into some of the tastiest FPL teams either. Like Liverpool has no Europe. Chelsea has no Europe. It's just City, Arsenal, and Spurs. Leicester, you're not investing in those players anyway. So, so we have to go back to Charlie Austin, though. I would consider bringing Charlie Austin in, but I'm not going to even get close to hitting that transfer button until after their Europa League match on Thursday.
Oh, that's right. I actually forgot about that match on Thursday. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome. Don't pull that trigger just yet. His knee, his explosive knee could actually come to full explosion on Thursday.
And they did sub him. I think he got subbed in the 70th minute or something
He was on the verge of scoring a hat trick and he was taken out so clearly to play. I think they're playing Inter Milan, I think, on Thursday.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think he hasn't played that much at the start of the year. I mean, it's a tough run, but I mean, he's not going to be rested away to Man City, that's for sure. I mean, unless he gets injured. So I think he's safe. I mean, it's too early in the season. This isn't late December yet.
What are you going to do, play Shane Long? Don't be crazy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. Sporting DC says, I made two moves last night, dumping Defoe and Lallana for Lukaku and Joe Allen. Am I stupid?
I mean, I would never call anyone who listens to our podcast or tweets at us stupid. Clearly, you're very smart because you've made the right choice. But I would be pretty disappointed if I dropped Lallana ahead of this United game because Lallana clearly was missing from whatever forward momentum that Liverpool team was lacking.
They did look better when he came on. I think his
substitution proved he's totally healthy. And as you said, Liverpool doesn't have Europe. Lallana's starting next weekend.
I think in the end that it's a good move. I mean, you might want to end up bringing Lana back in at some point, but I mean, Dumpy Defoe in particular is a good move. I just think, I mean, he's been scoring, but that team just isn't, they're just not good enough, and they're going to have matches where they just get totally run over by another team.
I'm sorry to talk over you, but if Sporting DC, if the only way he could afford Lukaku was to dump Lallana and get Joe Allen, then yeah, that's sort of inarguable. But
yeah,
Liverpool have just an amazing run of fixtures coming up. You've got to have some coverage there.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, it's my turn to throw it to break. Let's take a quick one, and we're going to come back and preview game week 9.
All right.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, Brandon, game week 9, just Saturday and Sunday this week. A nice clean 2 days worth of fixtures.
There's something that Monday fixture makes it all spread out, particularly you get the Friday to Monday fixture list. Have they done that yet? Friday to Monday? I'm not sure if they have.
I don't think they have. Maybe they did, actually. Maybe it was in game week 2. I can't remember.
It's like the NFL has been slowly stretching out its game week from now. They have, don't they have like a Thursday night game now in the NFL? And then Monday night football.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's like it'll be Friday before you know it. And then they'll just take over college football Saturdays, too. So it's an interesting week. We don't have to run through every single match here, but one thing that stands out to me is this Bournemouth Spurs match, the early match on Saturday, and Spurs have a midweek Champions League fixture. That seems a little odd to me. I'm surprised that didn't get moved to Sunday.
Yeah, apparently Pochettino doesn't have a lot of clout there in the scheduling office.
Yeah, that to me is a possible rotation risk for sure, that match.
And Spurs, that is an away Champions League fixture for them to Bayer Leverkusen. I mean, it's not like flying to Qatar or something like that. But still,
that's a tricky one. You know, theoretically, that's a good. Well, I mean, Bournemouth have looked a lot better, so I don't see a clean sheet for Spurs in that match. I think that Bournemouth, their attacks have looked a little bit better. You know, I can see some rotation going on there. Ben Davies might get another league start.
Yeah, Bournemouth scores at home too. They are a force.
I may even end up starting Simon Francis in this match. This could be like a 0-0 draw sort of match.
I would not be surprised. What about Arsenal Middlesbrough? Middlesbrough stood out to me this weekend as one of the teams that is definitely on the decline. Them and Hull. They could not put a finishing move together to save their lives against Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, I think I need to bring in an Arsenal. I don't have an Arsenal midfielder right now, and I'm pretty scared of this match. And so I think I probably will bring somebody in. I'll be watching the Champions League closely to see how much everybody plays. I'd be a little concerned. You know, Theo Walcott played all 90 minutes in the Champions League fixture. I'd be a little worried that he might not start in this match.
Sure,
I mean, he might bring Giroud back in for Oxlade
Chamberlain, maybe, who's been sort of moaning in the media about how he doesn't think he's going to be at Arsenal much longer.
Yeah, exactly. Burnley Everton, an interesting match as well, because Burnley, kind of like Bournemouth, have been a lot stronger at home. I think Lukaku is a definite captain option for this fixture. But we've also seen Burnley really, it's kind of weird. It's like they park the bus at home and they don't do it as much away. It's funny because I just talked about parking the bus earlier, but it does seem like they're like a fortress at home, but they don't actually score any goals. So I don't know. It's a strange one.
I think we figured it out. Parking the bus is just a fun thing to say.
It sort of
sounds like a dance move, parking the bus. I'm just going to echo your sentiments. That is a tricky one. I would avoid captaining Lukaku against Burnley at home.
All right, I think we can skip some of these. I don't know. Hull Stoke, I mean, that's like a 2-2 match, and who knows who scores in that one. Leicester
Jonathan
Crystal
Walters,
Palace.
Obviously.
Leicester Crystal Palace, I kind of, you know, Slimani is still a player that I'm looking at, and I'd be curious to see if he, you know, how he does. He started off like a house on fire, and he's been a little cold since then.
I think he was rested for Champions League over the weekend. But I would stay away from this match, Leicester Crystal Palace. I'm not totally excited about that one.
A little more excited about Swansea Watford, just to see if Bob Bradley can actually, you know, get a home win. Jordi Amat is going to be back in my team for the first time in like 7 weeks. I'm kind of excited about that.
Jordi Amat, who has played like most minutes per, like least points per minute probably in the entire FPL.
Yeah, I think his form is like 0.5 or something like that. West Ham, Sunderland. This is Antonio's last stand. Indeed. We'll see what happens here.
He can do it. Pickford is going to shut him down, though.
Maybe.
Liverpool, how do you play that one? So you've got Pickford. Obviously, you're going to play Karius against at home to West Brom. But would you put Pickford up against West Ham? I mean, West Ham is kind of mercurial at the moment.
Okay, let's say I had Pickford and Heaton. I think I would play Pickford away to West Ham.
Yeah, banking on those save points, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Liverpool West Brom. I imagine, especially with this 0-0 draw, that Liverpool's going to win this match like 5-1 or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Typically.
Sturridge looked terrible in today's match, didn't you think?
Yeah. I wonder if he just had too much pressure on him because he's clearly out of favor with Klopp, and he was taking advantage of Lallana coming back from injury. And
they looked so much better when Lallana came back into the match.
There were a couple passes that went into Sturridge, like near the penalty area, and Sturridge just wasn't even paying attention. Like, he wasn't even ready to receive the ball.
It was strange. Yeah. I think it's probably gotten his head a little bit. You know, there's so many people talk about how selfish he is, and I wonder if he's a little conscious of it now. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, he might be a classic case of a player that, like, he's just not dumb enough to be good. Like, he's just thinking too much all of the time.
Yeah. By all accounts, he's considered a smart guy and really friendly. And, you know, so, yeah, you can be too cerebral out there for sure. Sunday's matches, Man City, Southampton. Very excited about this match, particularly because, you know, as we just talked about, I'm really curious to see what Charlie Austin does. Even more than Aguero and Sterling and everybody else, I want to see how Austin performs.
That too. I mean, Southampton's defense is in pretty fine form too. And I know Aguero is going to be looking to atone for his sins against Everton.
Yeah.
And they're still at home, and they're going to want to put on a show for their fans to show them that they still can win the league at a trot. So it will be interesting. It's a very interesting matchup considering the form both these teams are in.
And Chelsea, Man United, I just imagine it's going to be hugely disappointing. every big Mourinho match is totally disappointed, it seems like. So I imagine this will be like a 0-0 draw, or maybe a 1-0 win on one side. You know, maybe Matic gets a goal in the 67th minute or something like that. You know, so, like something that helps no fantasy managers is probably what's going to happen here.
It is a really brutal run for United right now. I mean, two away matches in a row to teams they have to sort of set up defensively against, which is strange to say the least. They could really just use a cakewalk fixture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have it next week. They play Burnley in game week 10.
I mean, what are the odds of us still having Ibrahimovic in game week 10?
I don't know. I mean, I guess
they're actually pretty good for me. I'm not saying I like that, but
yeah, it's like 50-50. I mean, well, no, not even that high. It's like it depends on what happens at the Champions League matches. You know, if Aguero gets injured or something,
right?
Or somebody else. All right, that's it. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. Please leave us a review. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can also find us on Google Play, Acast, and TuneIn. How'd that go, Brendan? I don't do that. I normally leave that to you.
Keep naming places where you can listen to Always Cheating. But how about this? How about places they can follow us on social media? If you're listening to Always Cheating and you want more, you can find us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. Facebook page, which is ever growing. That's where we post updates on our AC Showstoppers head-to-head league. That's facebook.com/always cheating. Send us an email if you want to get us a more in-depth sort of question and answer session. And we've had a few people send us Rate My Teams, or you have a real dilemma that you feel like you can't get across over social media. Yeah, just send us an email. It's hailcheaters@gmail.com. And visit our website, alwayscheating.com, where Josh's happy birthday FPL post resides. Just go to alwayscheating.com and hit the blog tab, And you can also still join our Hail Cheaters Super League mini league right there by hitting the league tab, and there's an auto join button. And our mini league code is basically everywhere all across the internet.
All right. Well, Hail Cheaters, Brandon.
And Bacani forever.
Have mercy.
Welcome back, Josh.
Thank you.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.